Today's podcast is brought to you by Visa. With the capacity to process over 65,000 transaction messages every second, Visa has been bringing innovations to the way we pay for over 60 years. Imagine a world where, instead of just tapping to pay with Visa, you had to wait for everyone in front of you to cut a check. Everywhere you went. Imagine how much fun it'd be trying to track down your cousin in Milwaukee for league dues. That's why Visa's vision is to be the best way to pay and be paid everywhere so you won't have to. Whatever your goals are, Visa makes paying fast and easy. The only thing left to figure out is, where would you like to be? Visa, everywhere you want to be.
Good morning. Welcome to Monday. This is First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is Nick Wright. And that is Chris Carter live from Atlanta, where he is this morning, but joining us all morning long. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Jenna. Good to see you, Chris.
Good morning. Good seeing you guys.
We have a great show for you today. Lots of sports happened yesterday. Lots to talk about today. The unstoppable Chiefs, well, they suddenly look mortal. The Cleveland Browns, well, they don't look like the team many were expecting them to be. And there is a lot of finger pointing this morning going on in Dallas with the Cowboys. That's where we start today. Cowboys visiting the Jets. Here we go. Sam Darnold back after missing two games with mono. Dallas lost their last two games, trying to get back on track here. Down 12 in the fourth. Zeke cuts the Jets lead to 5. Jets would add a field goal, but Dak
is
himself
shot
here with 43 seconds to go. Cowboys need the 2-point conversion to tie, but Dak comes up short there to Jason Witten. The onside kick is no good, because when does that ever work anymore? And Sam Darnold finally has the Jets in the win column as Dak and the Cowboys are left to ponder their 3-game losing streak. CeCe, I'll start with you. Yes, Sam Darnold's back. Yes, the Jets offensive line played great. Give them credit. This is self-inflicting, this loss on the Cowboys. What do you think went so wrong for Dallas?
Well, there's a couple different ways to look at it. What I like to look at, did I overestimate how good Dallas would be? Did I think, like Coach Mangini always talks about, oh, there's no carryover from one season to the other? I just assumed Dallas would have a top 10 defense. At worst, I thought they'd be able to get after the passer. Even if they weren't in the top 10, I thought in special categories, that being sacks, that being turnovers, they would still be a special defense. So for me, that part right there, I missed on. I thought Dallas was a playoff team. But when you have the inconsistency with the injuries, the lack of creativity, that's how you get to 3-3. This is the first time they've lost to a bad football team. So for me, that's very, very alarming. Last week, I knew with Sam Darnold coming back, the Jets would play the best game that they had played all season. This was not a team, because their quarterback was injured, that didn't have the talent to be able to win a game. So I thought it was a dangerous game for Dallas. Dallas played down to the level of their competition. The Jets get the big lead. Dallas is not able to make enough plays. The injuries in Dallas continue to mount. And the last thing, if I'm going to throw a pass with the game on the line, I am not throwing a pass to Jason Witten unless I trick everyone. You got to be a little more creative to try to tie up the game. I don't like a quick slant to Jason Witten in the slot when you know Greg Williams is going to have an all-out blitz. So Dallas has huge problems, and these aren't going to go away soon.
Well, Chris, you touched on what is clearly all of the biggest issues. I'll start in the same order you did. Defensively, Tank Lawrence got that huge contract this offseason. Where is Tank Lawrence? He had two sacks in his first 3 games of the year. Nowhere to be seen since then. He was supposed to be, Robert Quinn was supposed to be his bookend, not the other way around. So the Cowboys' defense, where they spent some money, has not been elite. Byron Jones, a player that we said is the next on the list for the Cowboys to get paid, he is not having near the season he had last year. And then it comes to the critical moments of the football game in the red zone. We said last week the New York Jets had allowed an impossible 53 consecutive red zone trips to end in points. They hadn't forced a missed field goal, a turnover, or a turnover on downs on 53 straight red zone possessions until Dallas rolls into the red zone. 3rd and 1, Zeke is stuffed. And then on 4th and 1, they get Dak out on the move, which in theory is a good move. move, except you're without your left tackle, you're without your right tackle, and the guy the right tackle is supposed to be blocking actually sweeps over and makes the play along with the safety for the New York Jets, the hard hitter Jamal Adams. So those plays, the have to have it plays, none more notable than the fourth, than the two-point conversion with the game on the line. This, if the Cowboys had forced overtime, if they had succeeded on the two-point conversion and won this game 27-24 in overtime, we'd be talking about how ugly it was, how concerning it is, but at least Dallas would be in first place by themselves in the division. They still wouldn't have a terrible loss, even if they had a terrible showing. But it, with how poorly they played, they had the opportunity to erase it right there. And I agree with you 100%. You throw it to a guy who was doing Monday Night Football last year, and it looked like that was your top option because you had the blitz, because you didn't have time. Amari's out of the game. Randall Cobb's out of the game. That's a disaster for Dallas. This is the first time the Cowboys have lost to an 0-4 or worse team in 20 years, which is these types of losses are the types of losses that can put your coach's job in jeopardy, something a week ago I didn't think was at all possible this season.
And then, CeCe, again, off your point, it's a shame they couldn't take advantage of what was a Philadelphia loss yesterday. Mm-hmm. Clearly would have put them in great position in the division. But how does this Dallas Cowboys team come out and start slow again? After everything we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks, you would think they'd come out with a little more energy, a little more gusto. It was yet another sluggish start, and they could never really get into this game.
Yeah, Jenna, you make a great point. You would think with their season coming to play the Jets don't have any energy looking for life. They're going to get after Sam Darnold. So for me, I don't have a problem because I think sometimes people get it mixed up. When people don't execute, they think that they're not focused. So I thought Dallas was focused. I just thought that the Jets were a better football team. Dallas is not a good football team. So I'm not going to say that they had a slow start because they weren't focused. I thought that the Jets came into the game because earlier in the game, it was just back and forth, just jockeying for position. And then we get my man Robbie Anderson makes the big play to be able to give them the early lead. And then it looks like, okay, Dallas might be in trouble today. They're not very good. Their offensive line, we should not use the word great with their offensive line for a long time. Zeke hadn't been great. When you can't force enough turnovers, you can't get to the opposition, that's what you're going to face the problems that the Dallas Cowboys have now. And I believe we're going to be watching this all year, unless we just change our commentary, because I thought Dallas was a playoff team. I have to look at them as just a middle of the pack, a normal NFL team right now, and can they win their division?
What a difference a couple weeks can make. All right, time now for Put a Grade On It, sponsored by CarMax. Sam Darnold put up 338 yards and two touchdowns in his return from mono. More importantly, he got the Jets their first win of the season. Nick Wright, put a grade on Sam Darnold's day.
See, I got to give him an A. Darnold couldn't play last few weeks because of an inflamed spleen. We all laughed about having mono. Nobody has it since high school. He was outstanding. He played the type of football that Adam Gase, I'm sure, thought he was capable of playing when he took this job. That is a great win for the New York Jets. I have to give Darnold an A. He was outstanding.
Yeah, he lifted up the whole organization yesterday. He was the difference in this game. Adam Gase's creativity and play calling, you can see the reason why he wanted that Jets job with a young quarterback like Sam Darnold. Exciting for Jets fans who haven't had a lot of excitement. We thought after they lose this game, we'd say, oh, well, let's wait till next year on the Jets. Well, maybe we don't have to wait till next year. Great performance, a performance by Sam Darnold.
Are you ready for what's ahead? You can't always predict the future, but you can game plan for it. Generations of families and businesses have harnessed the power of Pacific to help them reach their unique goals. Whether you need to save money to meet your needs, ensure your family is protected, or make sure you don't run out of money, Pacific Life has a variety of financial solutions that can help. Pacific Life counts more than half of the 100 largest U.S. companies as its clients and has been named one of the 2019 World's Most Ethical Companies by the Ethisphere Institute. Protecting what matters most to people for 150 years and counting, that's the power of Pacific. Ask a financial professional about how Pacific Life can help you game plan for your future or visit www.pacificlife.com.
Back to
to Baker Mayfield and the Browns looking to bounce back against Russell Wilson and the Seahawks. We pick this up in the fourth quarter. Browns driving Nick Chubb with the 3-yard run to put Cleveland up one. They tack on the 2-point conversion for a 3-point lead. Seattle Lancer with a Chris Carson touchdown. Browns still had a chance, but Baker intercepted for the third time in the game. Seattle wins, improving to 5-1 on the season. Oh, get happy, Pete Carroll. Browns fall to 2-4. Here's Baker after the loss.
Any loss hurts. Losing at home sucks. I mean, we played 3 games here, lost 3 of them. So it hurts, especially when it was a game that we really felt like we needed. The refs are never an excuse, and I'll probably get fined for saying this, but it's pretty bad today. I mean, the guy's squared up with him, running at him. He's lowering his head into Jarvis. What's he supposed to do? Avoid him? I mean, this isn't bullfighting. I mean, I don't know. It takes me off.
Not sure if he was ticked off when the refs ruled for OBJ making that catch, but whatever. Nick, is it time to hit the panic button for the Cleveland Browns?
Absolutely, unequivocally, yes. I mean, this. Listen, Baker.
Don't mince words, Nick.
And by the way, there was questionable officiating throughout the day yesterday. If you were watching Dallas in the Jets, that one possession with their 5 straight flags, the officials didn't cause you to blow a 20-6 lead. The officials didn't cause you to throw a backbreaking interception, the first of 2 backbreaking interceptions, up 20-12 right before the half with a chance to extend your lead, and then the Seahawks drive down the field and all of a sudden it's 2-point game at halftime. And the officials didn't make you throw an interception on the final meaningful play of the game that Jenna showed you. The Browns had to find a way to get 3 wins in their first 7 games. Because as we've talked about ad nauseum, their schedule really opens up the second half of the season. They just needed to be around 500 through the first couple months of the season. And they're not going to be able to do it. And they're not going to be able to do it for a number of reasons. One is the week 1 loss to Tennessee, a Titans team that has scored 55 points in total since they played the Browns, who scored 43 against the Browns. And a week 3 loss to the Rams, a Rams team that has not won a game since then. But the real reason they're in this position, yet Freddie Kitchens might be overmatched and the offensive line, even though Nick Chubb played well yesterday, continues to have its issues. Baker Mayfield's thrown 25 interceptions since he's been the starting quarterback of this team, see? It's the most in the league. Mm-hmm. It would be the most in the league by a huge margin, but Jameis desperately is trying to catch him with the 5 yesterday. Is there at 24. Right. Baker's been a turnover machine, and he was the guy they were supposed to be able to rely on to steady things to a degree. He hasn't been that, and yeah, I'd say it's time to panic in Cleveland if you're trying to make the playoffs.
Well, make the playoffs. What about win a home game? You've had 3 home games. And with that fan base, we have to give Cleveland fans some credit. I mean, they're human. We get them all excited this offseason. We had a great run last year. They add some more talent. They hire Freddie Kitchens. And then now they play 3 games at home, and they've been awful in all 3 games. So panic. I panicked a long time ago when they lost to Tennessee at home. I thought that that would hurt this football team. But need I remind you, before the season started, Jenna told us they don't give out these trophies in the offseason. So now we got to play some football. Kansas City, they going back to the Super Bowl. Oh, Cleveland Browns, they going to be in the playoffs. Dallas going to be in the playoffs. There are a lot of things this offseason before they played these games that we were wrong about. And after 6 weeks, it's time for us to adjust in what we're seeing. The Cleveland Browns are not a playoff team. The Dallas Cowboys are not a playoff team. And when you cannot defend the home turf, you expect, if you're a bad team, you expect to go 5-3 at home, maybe split on the road. But now what is Cleveland going to do? What are they going to do in their 8 home game?
Are they going to run the table? Right.
Stop. I mean, it's plenty of panic setting in on the banks of Lake Erie.
A quick follow-up to that, CeCe. When you're a young team with a first-year, essentially, head coach, relatively young quarterback, across the board, this is a young team. Who do you look to stop the bleeding on there? Who do you look to as the voice in that locker room to say, hey, we're better than this and we got to get this together? It doesn't seem like they have one, or if there's that person exists, they're not really doing their job.
Well, most of the time when you're in a crisis situation in a locker room in the NFL, there's a number of things you try to lean on. Typically, the institutional talent. If you have an organization or a coach that's been through stuff before, you know you can rely on them because they're going to be able to say and do the right types of things. They don't have that in Cleveland as far as the franchise and or the coach. Typically, you get into a bad rut of football, you lean on your quarterback because he's going to be the adult in the room to be able to stop this bleeding. And you have Baker Mayfield there. We thought he was going to be that. He hadn't been that. And then the last thing teams typically rely on, well, you know something? Let's just rely on our offensive line. Let's run the ball. Let's rely on our defensive line to take over the game. Neither one of those units had been spectacular for the Browns. That's why you have the inconsistency, and that's why you have the struggle in the first six games.
But here's the additional problem. I would be with you on the stopping of the bleeding if this was a game where Seattle jumps out on them. They're up 10-0. They do what Seattle does, grind the ball, take care of the football, and you're playing from behind. Cleveland had temporarily stopped its own bleeding. Cleveland was in brilliant position to be 3-3. Granted, it wasn't the three wins we thought they'd have through 6 weeks, but be 3-3 and be able to say, team in first place in our division, we went to their building and beat them. We already have half a tiebreaker there. Seattle, a team that's looked great, we beat them. We're 3-3, we're fine, but as we get ready to face New England and then hit the real soft part of our schedule. And they crumbled from there. They had multiple opportunities in this game to right the ship, to steady the ship. They'd gone loss, win, loss, win, loss. They were positioned to go win again. And Baker turned the ball over in two unforgivable spots.
I was going to say, do you have the feeling, we talked about this and you had the same expression when Baker did that and he had his big multiple interception game earlier in the season, that he gets in there and he says, well, I'm going to try to win this game myself. I'm going to throw the ball into tight spots. I'm going to win this game. I'm going to will it. And that's when he gets himself into trouble.
I mean, that could be it. I guess my only question would be, it's not that the game was won, but you have a 2-score lead. Then you have an 8-point lead with a minute and a half left before the half. And you're in the red zone. You are, barring disaster, you're going to go into halftime up 2 scores, either 11 or 15. And then disaster struck and you go into halftime up 2. Those are mistakes that you just can't make. And I guess maybe we should expect young quarterbacks to make them see, but maybe I had elevated Baker too high.
One thing, Nick, I wouldn't overreact to Baker. Baker's had a lot of bad bounces. He's had a lot of miscommunication. If you even watch the last interception, the wide receiver is supposed to stay outside. Baker throws the ball outside. The ball gets tipped up for another interception. They have had at least a handful of these interceptions. I would say are the wide receiver combination, lack of communication, lack of body language and chemistry. This is what's been happening to them all year. I thought a guy was zigging. I threw it. He zagged. End up being a turnover. So I wouldn't overreact to Baker in the turnovers, because every turnover is a story in itself, and I see a lot of miscommunication between the wide receivers and Baker Mayfield.
All right, moving on to the Rams. Last year's darlings of the NFC. This year's, well, question mark in the NFC. Could they get back in the win column against the undefeated 49ers? Well, not when Jared Goff is held to 78 passing yards on 24 attempts, and certainly not when the run game couldn't do anything with Todd Gurley sidelined. San Francisco gets the win 20-7. They now improve to 5-0. Rams, after losing just 3 games in 2018, have lost 3 in a row already. CC, when you look at the Rams, they've lost 3 in a row. Is it time to hit the panic button?
Yep. Well, this is the thing with Sean McVay. Sean McVay is the new Mike Tomlin. After the game, he's going to win the press conference. You see how upbeat he was? Oh, we're going to learn from this. We're going to take this. We're going to be accountable for this. Like, oh, okay, but what adjustments are you making? Because the league is starting to catch up to your offense. This offense is a lot of hocus pocus, a lot of motion before the snap. And once you snap the ball, there's a lot of motion as far as where the ball is going to go. The league has found out where the ball's going to go. So now they really have a beat on how to slow this team down. And if you can look at this matchup between San Francisco and what they did to them up front, there was one play where Nicky Bosa drove Whitworth into the lap of Goff. And it was like, wow, this young team is for real. I believe they have to make adjustments. I believe also they have to play more different formations. This system, as far as trying to run the ball, when they don't have Todd Gurley, is a totally different system. So let's just see if Sean McVay, if he's really a genius, let's see if he's the smartest coach in the NFL, like my guy Nick Wright, smartest guy on sports TV. What kind of adjustments is the guy going to make?
Well, and for Sean McVay, here's the one, I guess, the degree of difficulty I'll say was not on his side greatly in this game. Their offensive line, and I think sometimes on this show we maybe talk about the offensive line a little too much, but in this game, it was a tale of two teams. The Niners' defensive front annihilating the Rams' offensive front the entirety of the game. The numbers are jarring. The Rams were 0 for 13. On third and fourth downs. They had 157 yards on 50 plays. And Jared Goff is going to have the biggest cap hit of anyone in football next year, threw the ball 24 times for a whopping total of 78 yards. Should the Rams panic? Well, here is what is drastically concerning for them. We know how deep the NFC is. Do we think there's going to be two wild card teams from the same division this year? Two wild card teams from the NFC West? Because right now the Seahawks are cruising at 5-1 and have beaten the Rams. The Niners are cruising even higher at 5-0 and have beaten the Rams. So the best the Rams can do is split the season series with those two teams. And we can't even act like, well, once Todd Gurley gets back, see, it's going to be all better, because we've seen Todd Gurley this year. He's not the cure-all. Mm-hmm. They went from 3-0 and feeling great to really on the brink as quickly as a team can.
Is the difference Todd Gurley, CeCe? Has that really been the difference since they had him the bulk of last year and we really haven't seen the best of Todd Gurley this year?
Well, Todd Gurley's a superstar. I mean, he's one of the best dual running backs that we've seen come into the league. He could have easily had 1,000 yards. He could have been one of those guys like McCaffrey's trying to do, 1,000 rushing, 1,000 receiving. So explosive. And it sets up so many other things to be able to throw the ball deep down the field and also pass protection. If you put so many guys in the box, Todd Gurley is such a phenomenal player. To me, though, the reason why I talk offensive line all the time, Nick, is because it's the most telling thing in the NFL game besides the turnovers. The reason why other shows don't talk offensive line is because they don't understand what they're seeing. But if a quarterback can't throw the ball, if a running back in Todd Gurley doesn't have any hold, do you think he forgot to run? Todd Gurley, it's a combination. This offensive line, they have unbelievable healthiness the last 2 years. No starters missed any games. This year, that offensive line is a liability compared to being a strength. Todd Gurley is not the same player. Now, we don't see Goff making the jumps that we are supposed to make. If you don't protect the quarterback, and if you can't run the ball, you are going to have a hard time functioning week in and week out in the NFL.
We'll see. Yesterday's game was the perfect example of that. Like that, I looked at the game going into it as the Rams are desperate. They've lost two in a row. This has been their division the last couple years. The Niners are flying high but haven't really played anyone. And I thought this was a game that set up really well for the Rams to win. Chris all week said they're not going to be able to block them. They're simply not going to be able to. Nothing, none of the other stuff matters
right.
If flatly you can't block them. And yesterday, yep, the Rams could not block them, and their offense died. They had a good first drive, and then Robert Saleh's defense did pitch a shutout moving forward. No third down or fourth down conversions the whole game. It was a brilliant defensive performance by that Niners front, and the Rams looked awful.
How about the fact that the only two undefeated teams left in the league are the Niners and the Patriots? Mm-hmm. Their quarterbacks, Tom Brady, Jimmy Garoppolo. Yeah. What's up, Phil Bennett?
Yeah, also the two best defenses that we have in the NFL.
That is true as well. Texans versus Chiefs. This one was all KC early. Mahomes gets the scoring started with a 46-yard bomb up to Tyreek Hill. Boy, nice to have him back. Chiefs up 17-3 after one. But Houston came storming back. Mahomes, the rare sack fumble as Houston rattled off 20 unanswered points in the second quarter. Thanks in large part to this, Deshaun Watson runs it in himself for the touchdown, 23-17 Texans at the half. Third quarter, Mahomes back at it, looking, finding his favorite target, Hill, another touchdown. Chiefs up 24-23. Texans weren't done. Watson with his second touchdown run, Two-point conversion puts Houston up 7, two-minute warning, 4th-and-3, and Bill O'Brien decides to go for it. That's a Nick Wright decision right there. Watson finds DeAndre Hopkins for the first down. That ices the game. Texans win, both teams now 4-2. After the game, Watson was asked about his MVP chances. Take a listen.
I don't really get into, you know, the MVP stuff. Me and Patrick always, you know, supported each other since college. When I was getting all the hype and this like that, he would always make sure that, you know, I was staying, you know, healthy and encouraging me and congratulating me. And I'm doing the same thing with him. So, you know, it's always going to be love. It's not any beef or anything, you know, comparing both of us. You know, we just want to, you know, just want to win. We just want to play football, have fun, and you know, be the leaders of our organizations. And that's what we focus on. So the MVP stuff, I mean, that's for you guys to talk about. I don't get into it. I just kind of, you know, focus on winning games and try to get to where we want to get to.
Nick, how'd they do it? How did the Texans beat the Chiefs yesterday?
Well, our friend Colin Cowherd does that Where Colin Was Wrong segment. This is with the Rams in the a moment ago, and now the Chiefs.
Right?
This is going to be a little version of Where Nick Wright Was Wrong. They did exactly what the Colts did, but they did it better. I mean, I had been the captain of Don't Be Worried About the Chiefs. Hey, it's time to be at least a little worried about the Kansas City Chiefs, if I'm being honest and fair. Because what the Texans did yesterday was dominate time of possession to an absurd 35-25 is a ridiculous
this was
number.
39-20.
It was basically 40-20. And by the way, when you don't have the ball, you can't run plays. Plays run 83-47. First downs. The Texans had more first downs in this game than any team has had in any game all year. So how were they able to do it? Well, Patrick Mahomes is not as mobile as he once was, and he got his ankle stepped on again. That's going to be a recurring theme. They haven't been able to protect Patrick Mahomes. Andy Reid in this game, and this is, I guess, part and parcel with Andy Reid, you had some game management questions, and LeSean McCoy, every time he touched the ball, seemed like he went for 12 yards. He handed him the ball 8 times in a close game where you didn't have to abandon the run. And the Chiefs defense that I said, and I stand by this, at the beginning of the year, we don't know what the defense is going to be. It's got a new defensive coordinator and 6 new starters. Well, now we do know what the defense is, and it's terrible at the moment. They can't stop the run. They can't get off the field. You said Bill O'Brien did what I would have done. I wouldn't go for it on no 4th-and-3 when a field goal gives me the win unless I know, well, the defense just is drawing dead to stop us. That's what the defense was. And that is a demoralizing loss. The Colts loss, you can say, was an aberration. Was this? Is some unluck? This was a demoralizing, run it down your throat, offense never on the field loss. And it was, to me, it was the most concerning loss for the Chiefs in the entire Mahomes era, or mini era, if you will.
I'm very familiar with Nick Wright and his excuses, because that's the same excuses I used to have when people used to tell me, well, Chris, how are the Vikings going to be this year? Oh, yeah, man, we got 3 or 4 new starters on the defense. Well, Chris, how are the Vikings going to be this year? Oh, no, we're going to score a lot of points, man. We added another running back. We got another tight end. Well, how are the Vikings going to be this year, Chris? Man, the Vikings are going to be exciting. The offense is going to score a lot of points. But the reason why we didn't win championships, and I just hope I'm consistent, it just happens to be falling on Nick's neck. This Kansas City team does not have a chance to win a Super Bowl until they address that defense. That defense is horrible. And there is a model out there to beat Kansas City. Look at the playoff game. How many minutes did New England have the ball? Close to 40 minutes. The last 2 weeks, the Colts and the Texans had it 37 and 39 minutes. That's disgusting. If you're a defensive player, you should be totally embarrassed. So for me, I didn't think Spagnuolo was the answer in Kansas City. He hadn't been the answer around the league for the last 10 or 15 years. He had a great run with the Giants, and that's about it. I didn't think his scheme fit his personnel. So this is something that we got to watch. Kansas City with a high-flying offense losing back-to-back games at home? Wow, man, that to me is mind-boggling.
Go ahead.
Well, and the other element here is the bigger picture element is we talk about the Patriots and their schedule and how, okay, whatever it is, they're 6-0. And Chris and you have said all year, this is a 14-2 team. Let's say worst case scenario for New England. There's what, 13-3? So what do the Chiefs have to do to have home field come back through Arrowhead again? 9-1 at a minimum? the rest of the way with they had going into the year the second most difficult schedule of any team in the league. It gets a little easier, but not much easier coming up. These two home losses, when they're 10-point and touchdown favorites or open as touchdown favorites in this one respectively, they are going to have lingering effects. Even if the defense gets better when Chris Jones comes back, who's their best run-stuffing player, maybe their best pass rusher, even if the offense gets better once Tyreek Hill can play a full complement of plays, not just in packages, these two losses don't go away. And last year, they had New England have to come to Arrowhead. This year, almost assuredly, assuming they get there, right, which I understand at this point is an assumption, Houston saying, why aren't you talking about us going to the AFC Championship game? It would be on the road. These losses, the effects linger all season long.
And then quickly, before we move on, give a little credit to Deshaun Watson.
He's fantastic.
After that first quarter, it would have been easy for them to just sort of game manage and try to crawl back in. He had the composure to keep that team in it and then come back, have a strong second quarter, then eventually get the win. Talk some Vikings and Eagles. Vikings hosting Philly yesterday. This one was all Minnesota all day long. Stephon Diggs made it clear that he wants the ball more. Kirk Cousins got the message loud and clear. Diggs finishing things up. 7 catches, 167 yards, a career high, 3 touchdowns. Cousins tacked on another touchdown to Adam Thielen. And the Vikings win this one 38-20. They're now 4-2 on the season. Here's Kirk Cousins on his big day.
We missed Diggsy on that post at the end of the half. I thought about apologizing to him, but apparently that's not the way to go around here. So I guess my days of apologizing to people are over. So I didn't say a word to him, and I guess we came back to him the second half.
Coach, we'll talk Vikings in a second. Let's start with Philadelphia. How discouraging of a loss was this for this team? They get ready. They're in the process of embarking on a very tough part of the schedule for them, and they start this off with a loss.
This is a team that has a lot of things to overcome. It historically has been a D-line-driven team. That's how they've gotten pressure, but they have multiple injuries on the D-line. Then they try to mix and max pressure. You saw how that worked out against Atlanta. The injuries of the secondary have been dramatic. They need to figure out a way to cobble things together defensively, because they're in a bad spot, and it's not going to get better anytime soon. Now, that being said, they can do so many things offensively, and it's going to have to be driven that way throughout the course of the season. Do I think the sky is falling? No, because they're in a division with that
where the sky's falling for a lot of other teams.
Everybody, it's a toss-up now. So it's how well they can manage the problems that they have defensively, while maximizing what they can do offensively, and that's going to get better as DeSean Jackson comes back.
See, did you think this was a disappointing, discouraging loss for the Eagles?
Well, if you look at the Vikings, how the Vikings have struggled as far as their passing game, I thought it was very, very disappointing. But they do have some obvious weaknesses, and that being their pass defense, we knew was going to suffer coming into the season. We knew their corners were going to be a weak spot in this defense. But typically, they don't give you the time to throw the ball deep down the field the way the Vikings were able to do. So to see Kirk Cousins thrive against a team that's one of the marquee teams, which this wasn't prime time, but it was prime time for me, because the Vikings needed this game. Going against the Eagles is the competition. I thought they did some great things from a pass protection standpoint. They only sent three receivers into the route, went with 6, 7, and 8-man protections, moved Kirk Cousins out of the pocket to give him another launch angle, and had those wide receivers chew up those cornerbacks. So to me, I thought the Vikings really adapted to what they've been dealing with, and Kirk Cousins realizes he's got to be able to play better for this team to be able to reach its potential. And yesterday was Kirk Cousins at his best, Nick.
Listen, I want to give the Vikings full credit, because we went into this game talking about how the winner of this game stays in that potential elite category, and the loser of the game starts having to ask really hard questions. And the Vikings stepped up. They jumped all over Philly in the beginning. Kirk Cousins had it back-to-back. Excellent games. The concern, though, for Philly, the obvious concern is we saw what this Vikings team did against the Giants secondary, which is considered one of the weakest secondaries on one of the weakest defenses in football. Thielen had a really good game. Cousins had a really good game. They scored 28 points. And now against the Eagles secondary, Cousins has a great game. Diggs has a great game. And they score 38 points. And if Philadelphia cannot rush the passer, who is Philadelphia? The question I would ask the Eagles right now is, what are you great at? What is the thing you can hang your hat on other than the NFC East stinks? Right now, it feels like what Philly can do is similar to last year, where they were alive late in the season, even though they had quarterback injuries. They seemed to have some type of Super Bowl hangover. No one's running away with this division. If they were in the division the Vikings are in, we would say they're cooked. We would say right now they are probably the worst team in that division. And Carson Wentz didn't play terribly. They stopped Dalvin Cook, and they get run out of the gym in a game where, and I know, Coach, you hate when I do this, but that schedule is coming. You have at Dallas, fine. At Dallas all of a sudden doesn't look that hard. Buffalo has one loss. Chicago is one of the best defenses in football. Then you have New England undefeated, and then Seattle with one loss. You are playing four of the best teams in the league over the next 6 weeks, and going to Minnesota and losing, there's no shame in that. But being blown out from the very beginning, you got to ask some really tough questions if you're in that Eagles locker room.
Well, Philadelphia did pull within, what, 3 or 4 points. And then, so it's not like they were totally blown out in this game. The game was competitive for a while. I give Minnesota a ton of credit, though, for staying with the running game. And even though they averaged 3.5 yards a carry, they ran the ball 35 times. That's who Minnesota needs to be. They need to start with the running game, and they're the second best team right now in terms of running the ball.
Niners, yep.
They've got one of the top defenses. So by doing that and having the patience, which most teams don't have the patience when you're only averaging 3.5 yards a carry, it opens up everything else for Kirk Cousins. And this is what Cousins should do. The fact that he's had receivers as good as he's had that have been MIA through the first part of the season, that should never happen. This is the type of team they should be, and I give him a lot of credit for staying with the running game because that opened up everything they did in the past.
But for me with the Eagles, the frustrating thing is what we've seen the last couple of games is where they start slow and then they have to play catch up and then they run out of game. And Doug Peterson wants to keep putting on himself, but he said, yeah, we got to find a way to start faster. This has been a theme. It was a theme last year and it's a theme this year. They come out, they start slow, then they sort of have to kind of play catch up until they have to try to stay competitive. CeCe, what?
Well, one thing that I think, Jen, I think you make a great point about the slow starts. But I'm going to take you guys back to week number 2. And Coach Mangini will tell you this. I've never been in a situation where we didn't have enough bodies to be able to practice. And that's how the Eagles started off the season. Now, we know they have wholesale injuries across the board. But when you can't practice, and yes, I know they've been practicing since then, but the continuity of practice, and because they can do so many things offensively, do you ever really get great at one thing? So for me, that second week when they weren't able to practice because of the bodies, now more injuries are happening. Is that hurting the continuity that affects us in our first 15, our 30 plays? It takes us a while before the offense and before the team gets into the flow of the game. Coach Mangini, I posed that to you. I thought that was a problem earlier in the season. Do you see that as a problem continuing to move forward?
Yeah, it's always difficult when you can't put things together during the course of the week and then you go into the game and you're trying to get that timing, that rhythm, and all the things that you need to do to execute effectively in the start of the game, but you haven't really had the opportunity to practice at any kind of tempo. It's tough, and they do need to address the slow starts, and it's easier said than done, and I'm sure they're putting a lot of time and effort into it. It just does make it difficult when you can't actually work on it during the course of the week.
Eagles and Cowboys now tied for first place in the division.
Philly should be sending Sam Darnold some type of edible arrangement or gift basket.
A lot of finger pointing with regards to the refs yesterday all around, but let's just focus on the game itself and the team itself with the Cleveland Browns. Is it time to start panicking with where Freddie Kitchens has his group right now?
Look, all they do is talk about the wrong stuff. The refs are never an excuse, but I'm going to give you an excuse for why we lost. Yep. And it's just, you threw 3 interceptions. You were up to, what was it,
20-6.
20-6. You had everything going for you, and then it was a series of interception, block punt, interception, fumble. There's no way that game should have been lost. What did they talk about going into the game? We got to get Odell Beckham more touches. That's not the focus of your offense. You got to figure out how to win a game, how to win a game collectively, how to do those things that are in the best interest of the team, as opposed to we need to pacify this guy. Oh yeah, we lost, but the refs were weren't helping us. They were against us. Move on from that stuff and start focusing on what's important, which is what you can do to win the game. And I think through 11 games, he's got the most picks of any of the 30 Browns quarterbacks that have started. Oh. And look, I had about 20% of those quarterbacks. So it's the bar. I know what the bar is. And it comes to the point where it's not about winning the game. Let's start with not losing the game. That's the first thing that he can do, is start with not losing the game and then go ahead and figure out a way to win the game.
Coach, I'm going to say something I very rarely say on this show.
You were wrong?
That's yet to be seen. I totally agree with you. On the refs, very quickly, zip it. Not the time for it. You can argue it's never the time for it,
but certainly not
a game where you've got a 2-score lead, where you're up 8 after the first interception and the blocked punt, that sequence you're talking about. It's still 20-12, your ball inside of 2 minutes, inside of Seattle's 20, with a chance to go up either 11 or maybe even 15 going into the half. And then what happened? Another interception by Baker. And of the three interceptions, the one that to me was most clearly his fault, the one that's hardest to say was a miscommunication or bad luck, and it was a killer. You give Russell Wilson the ball with a chance to cut your heart out, guess what he's going to do? Cut your heart out. But even after that, you had a chance again to stay in the football game or to take control of the football game again. The team, I know they were upset that Jarvis didn't get the touchdown. That's why they challenged it. But then you get stuffed. Go get a yard. Go get the touchdown back so all it cost you was the challenge. This is a team right now that had an opportunity. At 2 p.m. Eastern yesterday, it really looked like we'd be saying, man, the Browns somehow steadied it. They might have some bad losses, but man, do they have some good wins. At Baltimore, home against Seattle, 3-3 through 6. How were they going to deal with the tough month of football Jenna was justifiably worried about? Well, it looks like, Chris, they were going to be okay. And they melted down. And for me, you much like I was saying with the Chiefs, you can't get these losses back. You cannot get these games back. And no matter how easy the schedule is down the stretch, if you start 2-5, 2-6, it doesn't really matter what the schedule looks like down the stretch.
CC, are you as concerned as these guys? Is it a Freddie Kitchens problem? Is it a Baker problem? Or is it just this team needs to figure out a way to win and not lose?
Well, in most situations, I try not to overreact, but I do in the back of my mind with a 2-touchdown lead. I did question, man, is Freddie Kitchens cut out for this NFL job? Now, I do have a lot of faith in John Dorsey, so I'm not going to jump off, you know, my belief in him so early. But I think that the overall passing game and them trying to throw the ball as much as they are, 2 more weeks, man, Kareem Hunt's coming back. So I don't care how much talent they have at wide receiver. The only way they're going to be able to protect that quarterback, stop those interceptions, is to have that offense revolve around Chubb and Hunt. That's what the team should be. I don't think they're going to do that because Nick's favorite receiver, the best guy in the world, Nick was like last week, oh, we got to get this guy the ball. And I said, that's not the way you learn how to win a football game, especially with the young team and a guy in OBJ that has not won in this league. So, to me, they got a lot of problems. Freddie Kitchens, is he cut out? Does he have the stomach to be an NFL head coach? That's still out there. Losing at home is never a remedy in the NFL for anything besides losing your job. So, I'm concerned about Baker Mayfield and how this offense continues to go forward of how they're going to attack defenses.
Can we just talk about Seattle for a second? Because they won yesterday. They're 5-1. Russell Wilson looks like an MVP candidate, and we don't talk about them at all. Are they quietly sort of Super Bowl contenders, Coach, as we engage now in week 6, 7 of the season?
Well, Seattle to me is the polar opposite of Cleveland. They know who they are. And they're going to run the football, and they're going to run the football every single game, and that's going to set up the passing game, and they're going to protect the football. They're one of the top teams in turnover differential. And because they run the ball so effectively and because there's such poise at the quarterback position, it does give them a chance to compete every single game. Do they have the defense to really make a strong run into the Super Bowl? I'm not sure about that right now, but the formula that they have of controlling the clock, running the ball, allowing Russell Wilson to make plays even more effectively and be protected even more effectively because of that is a great recipe to be competitive. I'm not sure if there's enough right now to actually win the Super Bowl.
And just very quickly, Jenna, one clarification. You said Russell Wilson's an MVP contender. Through 6 weeks, he's the runaway MVP. He would, through 6 weeks, his numbers for the year, if they were for the full season, would be the best touchdown interception ratio, completion percentage, and quarterback rating any quarterback's ever had in a year. He has separated himself now from Patrick Mahomes, from Christian McCaffrey, from whomever else. Through 6 weeks, he's been the best player in football, and he's the biggest reason they're 5-1.
Look now, but Kyle Allen. That's the whole sentence. Kyle Allen getting his fourth straight start in place of the injured Cam Newton, and he kept that momentum going. Kyle Allen finishing the one off, 20 for 32, 227 yards, two touchdowns, zero picks. Christian McCaffrey finding the end zone twice, and Carolina walking away with a 37-26 win. The Panthers now 4-0 since Kyle Allen took over after starting 0-2 with Cam Newton. Here's Ron Rivera on whether this is now Kyle Allen's job to lose.
I'm not going to worry about it. I'm not going to speculate on anything until I have to address that. So until then, we're going to stay in the now. We're going to stay in the focus on what we're doing right now. So again, as far as I'm concerned, we're just not going to deal with the question until it's time. And when the time comes, and then I will address it. But until, as far as I'm concerned, he's in his rehab program. He's doing his program. Our quarterback right now who's been playing for us is Kyle. And so we're not going to address it.
Nick, you probably know where I stand on this, but just out of curiosity, you think the Panthers should consider sticking with Allen when Cam is healthy again?
Well, at this point, they have to consider it. The guy hasn't lost a game yet, and we know that the Panthers had lost, I think it's the last 9 Cam Newton starts. Now, all 9 of those starts, he was some varying degree of injured, whether he needed a shoulder surgery or the sprained foot or all of the above. But as long as they keep winning, then, of course, you're going to have to consider staying with Kyle Allen.
But you wouldn't say the same thing with what's going on in New Orleans. You wouldn't say if
they... Well, they weren't 0-9 in Drew Brees' last 9 start. Well, it's based on all of the above.
Okay.
I think this will solve itself. I think Carolina, what they have coming up after the bye, is at San Francisco, a home game, and then at Green Bay. Either Kyle Allen and the Panthers come back down to earth in that stretch and Cam takes his job right back, or you go to San Francisco and you get a win, and or you go to Green Bay and you get a win in the middle, you take care of Tennessee at home, then Kyle Allen gets to keep the job. Now, yesterday's game, I think people should know, especially because it was a very early start, especially if you're on the West Coast because it was in London, that game was not about Kyle Allen.
Nope.
It was about the 7 turnovers by the Tampa Bay Bucks, 7, and it was about the 14 sacks and tackles for loss combined for the Carolina Panthers. The Panthers defense dominated that football game. But as long as if you're undefeated as a starter and you don't have first ballot Hall of Famer Drew Brees coming in behind you, then yes, see, it has to at least be on the board. Kyle Allen keeps the job. I don't think he will, but you no longer can dismiss it out of hand. At least I can't.
All right, guys, this is what we got going here. This Kyle Allen is starting to be like Johnny Appleseed, Paul Bunyan. And I don't want to, praise Carolina too much because I'm here in Atlanta and they don't like the Carolina Panthers. So I'm going to hold down my enthusiasm. But this is a real conversation. Scott Turner, Norv Turner, offensive coordinator, and his son, quarterback coach, they like Kyle Allen. They like his fundamentals. And since he's been in the lineup, and even last year's start where he won week number 17, their passing game has been more consistent. So now the question with Cam is, and Cam was in the process of refurbishing his overall throwing motion and trying to learn to deliver a ball a different way. So we know he's got a serious issue as far as his foot. To me, I don't believe the foot's going to be 100% healthy this year. So if the foot's not 100% healthy, is he a better passer than Kyle Allen? Because it's not a better athlete. You can't answer that question because Cam's only got one leg. He's not a better athlete right now than Kyle Allen. He's not a better passer than the quarterback there. So to me, it's fairly simple. And Carolina, after the season, is going to have to make a difficult decision, which I do. Wouldn't be surprised if they moved off of Cam in the last year of his contract and in the second year of them having a new owner there. So Carolina Panther fans, you can be excited, but there's going to be some ramifications from that kid winning all these games. And I think that ultimately this could be Cam's last year with the Carolina Panthers.
Well, I want to give the devil's advocate argument, if I may, for a moment. If, let's just say, Cam's foot does fully heal. If Cam does get to 100%, we saw Cam at 100% under this new offense the beginning of last year. First 8 games. They're 6-2 when he's playing the best football of his life. That is a higher level than Kyle Allen has gotten to in this league, and I would argue probably would ever likely get to in this league. With how that this defense is playing, and with given the fact that because they're undefeated with Kyle Allen, they're still in the heart of the playoff race. If you were to be able to get back a 100% Cam Newton with Gerald McCoy flying around, Brian Burns has been unbelievable.
But Nick, what is 100% Cam Newton? You act like you know what his throwing motion is going to be like. And he's got a Lisfranc sprain. That's a midfoot sprain on his left foot. We can't expect him to get 100% with that type of injury this year. So even if Cam was to come back relatively healthy, what Cam you think you're getting? Because the throwing motion's changed, and it's going to be a Cam that we haven't seen compared to the guy you're trying to slot into who played the first half of the season and looked good.
But also, is there something to be said for this team? You know, you don't want to kind of, don't shake the boat if the boat's sort of sailing on course. I mean, the team's all playing, doing what they need to do with Kyle Allen, and he's not just a game manager. He's actually playing okay.
Oh, well, I would argue he's, both things are true. He is definitely a game manager, and he's playing more than okay. He is playing very well as a game manager. They are not asking him to drop back and win them football games, which is what you are going to have to do at some point to beat the best teams in the league or to win a playoff game. I guess it depends on what the goal for the Carolina Panthers is this year. If the goal is to try to see if you can go on a playoff run, then Cam Newton is your only chance at that with this defense playing the way it is. Now, maybe that version of Cam Newton
totally
doesn't exist
deny,
anymore. Go ahead, C.
Nick, we don't know what Carolina would be like with Cam. You're just assuming that MVP is going to come back. I'm not assuming that because I haven't seen that guy in a long time. Yes, Kyle Allen is a game manager, but Carolina and their style, run the ball, Christian McCaffrey, throw it to him out of the backfield, play solid D, great special teams. That is how Carolina has been the most consistent. When they've been consistent, those are the things that they do. Cam had that 1 year where he turned into Superman. But for the rest of it, it's been manage the game, win time of possession, be more physical. I do believe this is a style that this organization can duplicate with Kyle Allen being the quarterback of the team. I had a coach tell me one time, he said, Chris, when you are a superstar, if you allow backup journeyman players to be compared to you, you know whose fault that is, Chris? That's your own fault, because you shouldn't even be having the same conversations with guys who don't have the talent level you do, don't have the experience, and all the other things that you bring to the team. So if we ever get in this situation, Chris, where you get hurt and we bring someone in and it's someone who doesn't have experience and all that, and we're comparing him to your work, you know whose fault that is, Chris? That's your own fault. So Cam is in a situation where he can blame no one else but the rigors of this game taking its toll on his body to put him in a situation that he allowed them to see this kid start 4 games. And now the comparison is really there. Where should we go in the future?
Drawing a blank.
I'd love nothing more, Jenna.
Start with the Vikings. Stephon Diggs asked for more action. Man, he got it. 7 catches, 167 yards, and a career-high 3 touchdowns in the win over Philadelphia. But, Nick, the most impressive individual performance Sunday was blank.
From the player who's been the most impressive individual player in the NFL this season, Russell Wilson. Down 14 early, don't matter. 325 total yards, 3 touchdowns, no turnovers in a come-from-behind road win against a desperate Cleveland team. Russell Wilson gets my award for yesterday and through 6 weeks, my MVP award for the season.
Jenna, I'm going to go with Stephon Diggs. Jenna, you don't like wide receivers talking trash, but unless it's your wide receiver and that being me. But for him to be able to live up to the things that he said, Kirk Cousins, we know that he was struggling throwing the ball. He got a call last week from his buddy at the White House. I guess that inspired him. So I guess big things for the Vikings and Kirk Cousins from here on out. But Stephon Diggs was amazing yesterday. 3 touchdowns and, more importantly, a pass interference that set up another touchdown.
All right. Good stuff. Moving on to the Texans. They came up big to beat the Chiefs at Arrowhead. Deshaun Watson scored 3 total touchdowns. Houston improved to 4-2. But, Nick, the most impressive win Sunday was blank.
I'm going to give it to the Niners for the way in which they did it. They're playing a desperate Rams team, the team that's won that division the last 2 years. The Niners haven't really played anyone of substance or of note yet this season. They allow the Rams to drive down the field, score a touchdown on the opening drive of the game, and then they shut them out the rest of the way. They absolutely dominate. The 49ers dominate the Rams the rest of the way. So I'll give the most impressive win to the 49ers. Held the Rams to 0 for 13 on third and fourth downs. Hold Jared Goff to less than 80 yards passing. Spectacular win for the 49ers, see?
Nick, I got to piggyback on you. After that opening drive where the Rams drove straight down all run, 7 plays, I think close to 60 yards, scoring a touchdown. After that, it was lights out. And I'm going to give it to the 49ers. Jenna, we know they were impressive on Monday night against the Browns. Everyone said, oh, they haven't beaten anyone. Well, they still haven't beaten anyone because the Browns aren't anyone and the Rams aren't anyone. But in the last... In the last 8 quarters, they've given up 10 points against Baker Mayfield and the Browns and the high-flying Jared Goff and the Rams. So 49ers were amazing yesterday.
Let's talk some Kansas City now. Last year, the Chiefs went 7-1 at home after yesterday's loss to the Texans. They're 1-2 at Arrowhead this season. But, Nick, the team with the most concerning loss Sunday was blank.
Oh, it's got to be the team that was supposed to be a good team that lost to a team that's supposed to be a terrible team. And that's the Dallas Cowboys. Hey, I know they made a rally late, similar to the game against Green Bay, where they made it respectable late. At least this one, they actually had a viable chance to force overtime. But the Cowboys losing to the Jets, that's unforgivable, given the fact that you were coming off back-to-back losses, albeit against really good opponents. You saw the Eagles mollywop the Jets the week before, and while Sam Darnold's good, he ain't worth 28 points good. So I say the Dallas Cowboys is the most disappointing and concerning loss of the weekend.
See?
I'm going to go to Kansas City, man, get some of that home smoke, some of that. Well, you like pork ribs, beef ribs?
Yeah,
what kind you want,
ribs,
Nick?
Pulled pork.
Spare ribs, what you want, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can't even win at home, man. Won't you get your dad and all the firemen out there to get the fire trucks out there when they used to be real good and go to the games and everything to put out that fire on that damn defense that they got, Nick, right?
I'll get on that.
Kansas City, man, that was a bad loss yesterday. At home? Back-to-back home losses?
To quote
Chris Carter, what about maybe the Texans are good? What about maybe give the other team some credit? I don't know, man. I'm just grasping.
All right, on to Monday Night Football. Packers hosting the Lions tonight, and Aaron Rodgers will once again be without his favorite weapon in Devontae Adams. So, CeCe, the X factor for tonight's matchup is blank.
Jenna, the first time in over 10 years that the most important Aaron in Green Bay is not Aaron Rodgers, man. It's Aaron Jones. Get that kid the ball. He is going to help that offensive line. He's going to make life easier on Aaron Rodgers. He doesn't have to be Superman, and it plays to the strength of that defense. Global warming, we know people don't believe in it. We believe in it. It didn't hit Green Bay yet, and they're going to need a running game when things get past October, things get a little cold up there. So, Nick, I'm going with Aaron Jones, please.
No Devontae Adams. So I'm going to go with Marquez Valdez-Scantling for 2 reasons. 1, Rodgers needs someone to throw to. And 2, my man Chris
Nick,
Carter.
I was going to pick him.
But you can't. Right, but you just learned to say his name, and now they stopped throwing to him. My man been working on this dude's name for 1.5 years. They finally got it down. They don't throw to him. So Marquez Valdez-Scantling. So Chris Carter can say that a bunch of times tomorrow. That's my answer for the X.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.